How's it going, everyone? Welcome to another episode of Brothers in the Foyer. We are here with Will Crispin and a very, very, very special guest, Camille Bauer. She's going to be our guest today, and we're going to take the opportunity to invite Camille and introduce her and give her the opportunity to introduce herself to this episode that we're going to be bringing to you guys today. Before then, we just want to encourage everyone to like and subscribe to this video. We also are going to post a link so that way if you feel free to donate, we would love any type of donations. That way we can continue to bring quality productions to you guys in truth and light. We also want to give a shout out to our partners, Serve Clothing.
Yes.
So we're going to post a link also to Serve Clothing so that way you guys can go to Serve website and check out the clothing that they provide as well. And so we're going to jump right into it. Camille, thank you so much for being here with us.
Thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
Thank you. So I want to do you some justice and introduce you properly. Okay,
there we go.
So Camille Bauer is a vibrant happiness advocate and grief recovery expert. Mm-hmm. As a cancer widow and mother of three, her positive perspective on life through adversity has influenced tens of thousands around the world. Her realistic and humorous view of life's challenges is a bright example of light and hope. She has a talent of deeply connecting with her audiences through vulnerable honesty. Camille's unique and engaging messages captivate the attention of hearts of those listening for the positive outcomes they can create in their own lives. She's a dynamic media influencer and YouTuber with over 500,000 views, as well as podcaster and motivational keynote speaker. Camille inspires followers to press forward with faith and belief in Jesus Christ.
Whew. I clap it up for Camille one time. My gosh.
Yeah. Now you see why I had to ask your name.
Yeah.
So, I want to give our audience just a brief background about how we got connected and how we met. So we originally met on a set of a training video that the church did for ward council meeting. Mm-hmm. Right. And so that's where Camille and I first met each other and connected. And ever since, I've followed, you know, Camille and her journey, and I've seen the inspiration, you know, that her posts and her channel, you know, gives. And being what we are in our podcast, trying to bring more truth and light and others to Christ, I felt there would be no better perspective to have from a women's view, to have you on to share your journey through the loss that you have had with being a widow, and just want to get how you've been able to really use the Savior's atonement to overcome and still find joy and happiness in his life. So thank you so much for,
thank
for
you.
Coming on.
Thanks.
Yeah, you're welcome. I'm happy to be here.
And,
you know, I think it's easier. The easy route is to put hard behind you and not revisit it and go back, right?
Mm-hmm.
And go forward. But being in a situation and have had the experiences I've had, it is worth it to me to be able to go back and share what's hard and intimate to be able to help others know what you can get through hard. You can talk about it. And when you talk about it and share, it helps others in their hard. So I'm happy to do that.
Thank you.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Do you mind sharing just a little bit about how did you come to be a member of the church and then take your faith and then spread it, you know, throughout your life? So basically your beginnings and upbringing in the faith.
So born and raised a member of the Church of Jesus Christ and married and had three babies. And at the age of 28, my baby was 8 months old. And it was like, you know what? My life would be perfect if I had a garage. And, you know, we lived in a condo. My husband was school full time, work full time. You know, we're just in the throes of life being hard, going to church every Sunday.
Right.
You know, just going through the motions. And, you know, that longing for this, you know, always looking at ahead, right, to the next moment of materialistic things, being like, gosh, you know, carrying groceries and a baby up a flight of stairs and just dreaming like, my life would be perfect if I had a garage.
Yeah.
And then, you know, cancer diagnosis came along and it severely shifted all of your thoughts. For, you know, chances are everybody who's listening, watching has been affected by a cancer diagnosis, either someone they love or themselves. And so you know that it throws, you know, your whole life in a 180. And so at that point it began like, okay, I can be happy when cancer's gone. And that became my new garage, right? And after several years of the up and down of, you know, scans every 3 months, you know, scanxiety, they call it, you know, you, you do all these treatments and then hope and pray and then, you know, it just doesn't go away. And I remember making my happiness conditional upon what I thought my life should be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's really easy to do. I think we all get in the habit of that where it's like, oh gosh, okay, I'll be happy when this.
Yeah.
You know, instead of a garage, then it shifted to I'll be happy when cancer's gone. And then we got a terminal cancer diagnosis after, you know, about after about 2.5 years, they said he had 6 months to a year left. And I remember in a quiet moment, I remember pleading to God, just like, why can't it just go away? Why can't I have a break? You know, why can't we have that that I'm looking for to be happy? And it was just this quiet thought of my own, which since then I have learned is the spirit that speaks to me. But it's just a quiet thought of my own of God, like, Camille, you're wasting the days that you do have with him, longing for the days that you don't have. And it was a really like a wake up for me that it's just, okay, why would I waste the precious time I have wishing for my life to look different? And if cancer isn't going to go away, so does that define my life of never being happy? Am I never going to have joy because my life isn't how I want it to be? And, you know, being born and raised in the gospel, you know, you hear, oh, you have joy and happiness and it can be there when it's hard, you know, but then it actually gets hard. And then you have to really think like, oh, whoa, is what I believe true? And I'm grateful for the opportunity to have hosted a cancer diagnosis in my life because it's given me the opportunity to grow my faith and really help me like, do I believe that? Wait, not only do I believe it, I have to know it to actually practice and push through and get peace because it was a daily battle of, okay, today am I going to choose hope and peace or am I going to be bitter?
Yeah.
And go to JCW's and get an onion ring and a peanut butter chocolate shake and drown my sorrows with some sugar and fat. And I'm going to be honest, like a lot of days, JCW's won out, okay? And I found myself, you know, 40 pounds overweight and eating my feelings, right? This balance of managing a family, we ran retail stores, you know, and I think as a woman, we put everybody's feelings first, like, oh, I have to make them feel better. And as a mother, it's like, oh, I can't let them see me upset or, hey, we got this. It's going to be okay. Dad's, you know, it'll be okay. We just need to have faith. It'll be all right, you know, and not giving myself that area to be vulnerable and honest. Even on the daily, because even in my marriage, which was amazing and great, the last thing I wanted to do was lay on my feelings and have him feel even more guilty that I feel that way, even though he knew. I mean, you know, he's like, my life would be easier. At times I feel so bad, you know, that I'm putting you and the kids through all of this.
Yeah.
And my life would, your lives would be so much easier if I weren't around, you know, when he was in those deep, dark places, you know, and it was like, what? Are you kidding me? Slap yourself.
Right.
And to be able to say, you know what? We're just going to choose, we're going to choose faith. And some days I chose onion rings and that was okay. And being a woman, it's hard to give yourself permission, that space to share your feelings. And so a lot of times I would just shut the bathroom door, go in the shower. And the only person I felt that knew how I really felt was God.
Yeah.
And, you know, I would cry and feel better. And then there were those moments. And I remember one vivid point where, and maybe you, everybody can relate to this if you're in a healthy marriage, when one of you are down,
the other one
needs to be up, right? You both can't be down or else you got a problem.
Right.
And when you're dealing with something heavy, such as what was on our plates, it was like, okay, I remember he was really down and depressed one day and it was super thick and heavy. And it, you know, as a wife, it was, he was always trying to be strong as the husband, right? And the leader of the family. So to see him crack, you know, and be in that vulnerable spot and just be so low, I looked at him and it was just like, I listened to him. I wanted to validate him. And then I excused myself to go to the bathroom, right? And I remember holding the bathroom sink and looking in the mirror and just closing my eyes and praying like, God, please help me hold it together. Please help me hold it together. And it was honestly like instantly like a light switch. Like all my tears dried up and I opened my eyes and I looked in the mirror and it was like, I got this. And then I went out and was like, hey, it's okay. Let's go watch some Jim Gaffigan comedy, you know.
There you go. Do something.
Let's go do something. You know, like let's divert our attention. You know, we can't wallow in it. And it's so good and healthy to feel your feelings and get them out and discuss them in a safe space, but you can't sit there in it, you know, it can't turn into hours, into days, into weeks, into months. And now you're wasting your life and Satan is so happy.
Yeah.
You know, and absolutely. So being able to pull your partner or your family member or your loved one out of a heavy place is a gift. And I look back on that frequently and I thank God for that little miracle, you know, that just that little tender mercy where it was like, okay, I didn't crumble. And since then, you know, fast forward now, 9 years since he's passed, I have seen those over and over, you know, God, like, I got you, you know, I'm not, and it's really hard as a member of the church when you read about Christ and it's like, oh, he healed this person, you know, he saved this person. And then it doesn't happen to your loved one.
And then you wonder why.
It is. Yeah. It's hard. And Satan loves you to wonder why, right? Like it's the victim mentality too a lot, which is poison. You know, it's you can't wallow and be in that because really at the end of the day, it's God's will. And to get to that point takes, it's hard. You know, you have to put it all on the altar and like, okay, whatever is going to happen. And I remember when he was terminal, it was, hey, let's just live the days we have. with as much joy and happiness and goodness as we can. Mm-hmm. And he was the first to show up for, hey, neighbor's moving in. If people can come help move, you know, and there he is with his oxygen tank strapped in his little backpack. And he was the first one there to help move.
Yeah.
They put him in charge of cleaning the church, which I think was a strategy because it's like, mm-hmm. who's going to say no to a brother who is on, you know, not in the best of health to, make time in his life to go clean a church, right. you know, who's going to say no to come help? But, you know, still looking outside yourself and seeing ways you can help others forever left an imprint. And it's very hard to receive service. You know, member of the church, you give, you serve, you help.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But when it's actually you.
Yeah, when it's your turn, it's a little different.
It really makes you understand why you give. And I knew I will never turn away a clipboard that comes around for a sign up to provide food for a family who's going through something hard. Like it forever changes you when you are on the receiving end. And so I'm grateful. I'm definitely grateful for that. And the up and down of my faith, having this furnace of affliction, mm-hmm. you know, I've gone through imperfectly. You know, I know that when I choose God, and I have experimented over and over with this, you know, I know that when I choose God, I know that when I try to have faith and attend the temple and pray, those days are easier.
You said something I would love us to speak to about the. We go through hardships, and I know our audience that's watching, they go through hardships, and that's why we wanted to have this episode with you, because you've been able to just navigate this whole, your whole situation so well and still be able to keep your faith. It reminded me, you're like, you know, the Savior can heal. He mm-hmm. can do miracles. Why isn't he healing, you know, mm-hmm. my husband, or why aren't our prayers being answered in this certain way? And it reminded me of the episode in The Chosen. I absolutely love this episode. Mm-hmm. Well, and season
I immediately
four.
Thought of think it too.
Yeah, it's like the apostles were there when they were gathered around the temple steps, right? And the Savior had just healed a blind man. And then Thomas, his soon-to-be wife, you know, was taken away, you know, and all in the same setting. And Thomas was just like, you can heal her, like bring her back, you know. And Jesus just sat there and was just like, you know, like, I'm sorry. But he had just healed previously, you know, a blind man. It's like, how is it that sometimes God answers our prayers miraculously? And sometimes he's like, you know, my son, my daughter, you know, this is just how it has to be. So like, speaking to that, I want to ask, like, have you felt those moments have been like refining moments for you? You know, because I've heard and have been learning that adversities can be very refining moments for us to shape us in our character and to help us be more like him, right? So has that been your experience, you know?
Absolutely. It's forever woven in the fabric of my soul, who I am and what I believe. And there's no way, had I got the garage and, you know, if he were still here, would my faith and outlook be the same? Because it just wouldn't, you know, if it's not put to the test, how do you know the knowledge?
It's not a testimony.
Yeah.
If it's not.
Yeah, there's no test. To,
yeah, right. Yeah. And in that is the bitter irony, right? Of of the adversities we go through. It's painful. It's hard. But I found solace so many times in, you know, I love Jeffrey R. Holland, my late spouse. That was his favorite. I know you don't have favorites, but we secretly do. Let's keep it real, okay?
Oh, it's not a secret of me. He's my favorite to listen to.
We love Jeffrey R., okay? And it was the last week. It was the last month of his life, and he was on hospice. Okay. And we'd come home, and, you know, at that point, I first started putting out, like, health updates on him on social media because people knew of him, but didn't want to bug me with questions about how he was doing. So that's when I turned to putting our updates on social media. And then people were like, well, how are you getting through this? And you have faith still, you know? And then it became, okay, we had retail businesses and you don't talk about politics and you don't talk about religion. Okay. Right. And then when we started getting the questions of like, how are you guys out having fun and smiling when he's dying? You know, like, how do you even get up and go throughout your day? Like, how do you do it? Yeah. And I remember one night, Clint and I were looking at each other and we're just like, are we really going to, we're going to tell him, you know, like, we're going to unabashedly declare like our faith and belief in Christ. Mm-hmm. And that's when it became more than just, okay, the tumors have grown X amount and, you know, this is the next step. But it became more, okay, this is how we're getting through it because of our trust and belief in our faith. And so at that point, you know, a year and a half goes by of these faith-filled declaration posts. So people are connected to our family. And then we come home on hospice and I, you know, I'm like, hey, bucket list, baby, like, what do we want to do? Mm-hmm. And, you know, we had lived that way beautifully for 4 years. Like my kids thought every 6 weeks you go on a vacation. Isn't that what everybody does?
Right.
Like, come on, where are we going this month? You know, like we lived so loud and so big. And I try to carry that into my today to in my life now. And I'm so grateful for that. But it was like, hey, what apostle would you want to meet? You know? And he's like, oh, obviously, I know. So I put up a post and it was like Clint and then a picture of Jeffrey R. And I said, if anybody knows how to get us in to see Elder Holland, you know, and just let us, we put it out there. And in like a day and a half, I got a call from the church office buildings. Oh, wow. And it was awesome. Sister Bauer, you know, it's like, yeah, it's like, hello, this is from, you know, the office. Like, you have three kids and they said each one of my kids' names and ages and my spouse. And it's like, we've had calls from all over the world and we have heard them and we would love to get you in. And it was actually the week of conference.
Oh, wow.
And so I was surprised that it's like, okay, they're busy. And it was a week of conference and we set up the date and it was a day before Clint's birthday. And they're like, and they knew, they're like, oh, and then his birthday's the next day, correct? We're like, yeah. And they're like, okay, cool. We'll have some little treats, you know, whatever. We're looking forward to meeting you and your family. You can bring one person to help you with a wheelchair.
Okay.
And we had the appointment. We were so excited. And we said, my brother got the Willy Wonka golden ticket, you know, because it's like, who else in your family gets to go with you guys?
There you go.
Right? And then his health took a turn and he ended up passing away the day before we were supposed to go see Jeffrey R.
Oh, my goodness.
Elder Holland. And it was, we reached out to the office and it was the day he passed. And I remember I'm sitting on the couch. They had taken his body. Like my family was still there. Mm-hmm. Nobody really wanted to ask me like, yo, are we going to go to see Jeffrey R? Are you going to still go see Jeffrey R. Holland tomorrow? Like nobody wanted to say it. And I was just sitting there and as I spoke to earlier, you know, later, I have learned revelation is those quiet thoughts in my mind, right?
Absolutely.
And I had heard in my thoughts just over and over, I want Kimberly to have my golden ticket, you know, which was my sister who is not as active in a member of the church. And so as just over and over, I want Kimberly to have my golden ticket, you know, and it was like, okay. And so a couple hours went by and one of my siblings, you know, kind of like I heard the chatter and I just kind of looked up from the ground and I said, hey, Kimberly, Clint wants you to have his golden ticket, you know, and my sister just like her mouth just opened like, are you sure? Like, because the natural choice would be my brother's wife who, you know, is a great amazing emblazoned faith holder and whatnot. And I'm just like, no. She's like, okay. So she borrowed one of my dresses, and someone reached out to our contact, but Jeffrey, Elder Holland, did not know until 90 seconds before we walked in that Clint had passed away the day before. Mm. And so we walked in, and he just said, I don't know what to say, but I love you, you know? And he reached out and just gave me like a huge hug, and I just, you know, started to sob. And we sat down, and Wyatt, at that point, my little baby was 4. Oh. Mm-hmm. And he broke a clock on Jeffrey R. Holland's desk. He like went over and like brought a little part over, you know, brought it over and was like,
I'll take that with me.
Yeah. Elder Holland was so gracious and kind and was like, oh, and I'm just like mortified. Like, I am so sorry. He's like, it is okay. No problem. We can fix that, you know? And I'm just in that experience, I learned that, you know, someone that's near death and going through being so close to the veil, being so close to the other side, they just have such a deep, thick spirit around them. And I was so grateful for that. And not that I expected that around one of the apostles, you know, but I know he's an incredible, amazing person. But it just was a testimony builder to me as well, that it's like they're apostles, but they're men too. Mm-hmm. And it's not like, oh, you know, this miraculous experience, but he was so gracious and loving and kind. And I treasure that we were able to go in his name and in his honor. And I'm grateful for, you know, just all the experiences that we've had. It's been messy. It's been ugly. It's been horrific. But I look at, you know, the nonprofits and the incredible people that we have met and rubbed shoulders with. And my life wouldn't be that had I not gone through that.
I love that perspective. I haven't lost a spouse. And I think that's something that I'm really terrified of. Mm-hmm. But I've lost a daughter. I've lost an older brother. And I love your perspective because it really resonates with me. I think that sometimes, especially as members, we put on this face where we're like, oh, like, why, you know, why this, you know, we initially question, you know, that. But I love how you have been able to navigate this. And I can tell from the way you're talking and the spirit I'm feeling, you know, testifying to me that what you're saying is true. And I just love how strong you have become. And that's only because of our Savior, Jesus Christ. And it's amazing, you know, that we can go through these really almost like life.
Our personal Gethsemane's.
Yeah. Amen. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, I couldn't imagine, like, you describing this to me just from a spousal standpoint, like, that could really destroy someone, you know, to go through that. And then to have kids and to have to figure out how we're going to live and how, you know, all these different scenarios. And so to hear you say this, it gives me hope, you know, and I hope it gives our audience hope to know that we have a loving Heavenly Father and a loving Savior that's going to be there for us when we go through these challenges. So thank you so much
welcome
sharing your story and, you know.
Yeah. And it's insight. You think, you know, God will rescue us, but a lot of times the rescue is just peace.
Yeah.
Not deliverance.
Yeah. Right.
And that's a hard pillow to swallow at times. And I loved, I frequently go back to, you know, speaking of Elder Holland, is he gives, I don't know which conference talk it was, but, you know, we aren't, in his quote, it's like, we aren't the first to ask, is there no other way?
Mm. Yeah.
And I frequently, you know, it's like, are we better than Jesus Christ? You know, like,
right.
He didn't get a miracle. Mm. He didn't get taken off the cross. He didn't, get spared the humiliation and mm-hmm. everything that he went through? Are we better than him?
Right.
And no, we aren't. And so just being able in life to be like, hey, give me the eyes to see. Give me the ears to hear.
Mm-hmm.
Help me follow you.
Right.
And come what may, and give me strength.
Mm-hmm.
And every day I feel like I live that, you know. Fast forward now, we just passed his 9th, 9 years since his passing. And, you know, now my kids are, you know, going through the throes of it. My, you know, oldest daughter is on a path that's heartbreaking to watch. Mm. She's 21, and then my son's 18. You know,
mm-hmm.
all three of my children have struggled with mental health
mm-hmm.
and suicide mm-hmm. ideation at times.
Yeah.
Being a single parent is excruciating, suffocating, overwhelming. Mm-hmm. I feel like symbolism of like being in under the water with a straw, you know, and you're just, you know, like just trying to get air to just get through another day. And I know without a doubt, I wouldn't be able to keep doing it if I didn't attend the temple. I've served there for, I think, going on 5 years. I serve every week as an ordinance worker, and okay. I mean, I feel like when I leave, like my strength is renewed, and it's like, okay, I can do this.
Yeah.
I can do this. And it's really hard when your life is fractured, when it's not perfect, when it's not, a mom and a dad, and mm-hmm. they're both go to church, and your family is this beautiful, ideal, you know, cookie cutter family church unit. And it's painful to go to church at times and hear people and see people, you know, kids going on missions and the paths that they go on. And I have siblings, you know, that both of their spouse is still alive, and their kids were born at around the same ages, you know, mm-hmm. and to see their lives, you know, their choices so much different than my children's, it's at times. And I know it's just the chapters of their life, and it's not the end of their story. And it's hard. It's painful. And, you know, I feel Satan creeping in so many times, you know, just like, just don't go to church, you know, just sit this one out. You don't have enough time to serve in the temple. What are you doing? You know, like, really, I don't. I'm busy. I'm a mom. I have since remarried. But I know without a doubt when I'm in the temple, it's like every single week, it's like, I'm here. I got you.
Yeah.
I don't understand everything there, but I understand the peace and the strength and the truth
mm-hmm.
that is undeniable, that resides in my soul and like fortifies me when I walk out. I mean, we're promised angels to help us.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like going through hard and trying to navigate life with a fractured family, that's all I can do to get the peace on my pillow at night is like, God, I am giving it up. Imperfectly, but I'm trying, and it's like I will sacrifice anything I can. Just help me, help my family, you know, guide my path, guide my steps, guide my life. And I get so much comfort and peace in that. And just all day long, we'll just talk about how the temple has changed my life and really helped me grasp the atonement of Jesus Christ and the real actual reality that it is. You know, I was so naive growing up. You think the atonement of Christ is for sinners, you know, it's just I did something bad, dang, I'm gonna have to repent.
Absolutely.
And thank you for the atonement, so I can, you know, I don't want to do it again, you know, dang, I did, now I'm gonna have to repent
now
again.
I gotta do it again.
But I cannot believe how the atonement is such an active part of people's lives for those who are suffering,
mm-hmm.
for those who have broken hearts, for those who are in pain.
Mm-hmm.
That is the atonement of Jesus Christ, right? Mm-hmm. And I had no clue about that. Like, born and raised, taught in the church, like it just was a piece that I didn't understand. And maybe I'm grateful for the experience. You know, I constantly go back to that. I'm grateful for all the hard because I wouldn't know that about the atonement.
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't know that Christ will be there and bind up my wounds and help me continue another day. The strength in the atonement, right? Strength.
And I'd love to speak on that. Ted R. Callister
mm-hmm.
wrote an amazing book, The Infinite Atonement. Mm-hmm. He speaks directly to how the Savior's atoning sacrifice is for the suffering, and then mentions elements of suffering that we're going to face and that we can face here upon this earth. From the, you know, the family that has lost a child, you know, to the mm-hmm. family that, or the woman that loses a child through abortion or cancer, and specifically names off all these maladies that we suffer and experiences that we may have, that the atonement is for those things. Like when the Savior, when it says he experienced everything and he went below all depths, like it, that's literally what it means, you know, not just for the sinner. So I love that you bring that up, because one thing about our that we'd love our audience to know is that the gospel and the Savior's atoning sacrifice isn't just for the repentant sinner, but it's for our everyday walk of that peace that we need. And we spoke in one of our previous episodes about that peace, you know,
yeah.
that passes all understanding, and that we need that, you know. And so thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah, you're welcome. Mm-hmm. And the prophet, right, just in the last conference, I think, mm-hmm. wasn't it? And he said,
I believe so.
Study the atonement of Jesus Christ every week till the next conference. Something maybe I
so could the, be along totally those lines, wrong, yeah,
but
yeah.
I think that was something that was brought up.
Yeah,
because it's life changing.
Yeah,
most definitely.
So I have a question.
Yeah.
Earlier you spoke about how, you know, just in the days and weeks and months that that followed the passing of your husband, you know, people reached out in ways to give you guys service, whether it was offering meals and things like that. And mm-hmm. you said that was something that was very needed mm-hmm. for y'all to be able to learn how to receive that service, especially in a church that just proclaims the giving of service, like love one another and give service, things like that. So I was curious to know, when you're dealing with something like this, or when you know someone who's dealing with loss in this particular case, what are the things from the outside that are helpful to someone going through it? And more importantly, what are the things that are not helpful
yes.
to someone
so
dealing with grief like this? 'Cause I've dealt with some grief, mm-hmm. But at this point, nothing as close to home as you have just yet. I lost one of my uncles to cancer, and he was like a father figure to me. So it hit hard when we found out his diagnosis. And then, as stubborn as he was about treating it, that diagnosis didn't get broadcast to the family until it was terminal. So finding out the news and then his death were very close together. So it was sudden for that, and that was hard. And I lost both of my grandmothers to cancer as well. And it was hard to watch, not being able to help and things like that. But having lost my parents, they're still here. My spouse is here. My children are here. I haven't gone through that as close as you two have. So I'm curious to know, what are those things that helped you through, and what are those things where you're probably like, don't do this to us, please.
This is a relevant topic.
Okay? I was going to ask. I'm glad
I need that. I need that.
It's actually like my number one YouTube video, what not to say.
What don't you do?
And what to say.
Yes.
So we'll start with the do's, because we'll end on the, yes, we'll end on the positive, on that. Don't give us the look. And maybe you could speak to the look.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That oh, I feel so sorry for him.
Right. And if you're listening to this, just imagine like this look of pity, right?
Yeah.
Going down the hallway at church was like a funeral procession. And can you imagine terminal diagnosis for a year and a half, going to church every week, and you were just like, oh gosh, just don't look at me like, don't give me the look. You know, it was just please. And people can't help it. Yeah. They just look at you and it's just like
they feel so bad, and
it's like don't give people the look, okay? Just try to reel it in. Just pep talk yourself. Do not look at people like you feel so bad for them or them. Don't do it, because then it makes us feel uncomfortable and not want to be around. You know, we want to be strengthened and want to be around you, but we don't want to have you wallow and look at us and feel so bad for us that we are depressed, you know?
Yeah.
So don't give us the look. Don't give cliche statements. Don't. Mm. Just don't. Oh, they're in a better place.
Please don't.
Really? They are? Okay, well, that doesn't help me feel better. And they're not in my place, so that is not helpful right now.
It's the better place.
Right?
How am I supposed to take that?
Right? And what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. It's like, oh, geez, if I hear that, come on.
Oh, no.
This makes me strong enough to want to punch you in the face.
Right.
Okay.
Like, I'm strong enough
don't
to do
say that.
I need you to back up.
And if you don't know what to say, say that. You know, I don't know what to say, but I'm here for you.
Yeah.
And don't try to relate.
Mm.
And I'm sorry for your loss. I know you mentioned that you lost a daughter. You know, people like, oh, I don't know how you do it. If I lost my spouse, I wouldn't even, you know, blah, 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 blah. And you're just
like, don't do that.
Don't try to relate. If you haven't personally gone through it.
Mm-hmm.
Don't try to relate and talk to me about it. You know, like, oh, my neighbor's friend's uncle's aunt had the same cancer and they died.
Thanks for that.
These are spot on.
Okay.
Thanks for
that's that. Not helpful. But I mean, I feel like people just have diarrhea mouth and they just, it's like,
they want to, but they don't know how.
They just want to try to relate to make us feel better, but it's like, don't.
And
just
uncomfortable
don't.
And
yes. Just like, and just say, I can't even relate.
Yeah.
I'm so lucky and so blessed that I can. I just, I'm here for you. And then a big one is if you have a cure for that, I don't know. Do you have an oil for that? Did you know that there's an oil that you can take that will make your cancer go away? You know,
offering remedies.
Oh, yes. What? Remedies.
Oh, my gosh.
Remedies.
Yeah, there's.
And I mean, unless you are personally the one who it has made helping. The difference in your life, that exact treatment has helped you personally. And you don't, that gives you the authority, right? The ground to stand on to come to me.
So people who just think they can help because of something they've learned about or heard about.
Yeah. And chances are, if you're in the throes of it, oh, heck, I have researched, I have scrutinized. I mean, you will go to the depths of wherever you think you, I mean, there's this great balance of Western medicine and herbs and whatever that you want to visit, as well as taking routes of what the doctors say. And I know you mentioned that, you know, your uncle went on a path that
he
chose that he didn't want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But all the options are out there as like a buffet. And if you haven't actually tasted that option, don't share it.
You know? Yeah.
I don't know.
I got you.
Do you have anything else to add?
No, you hit all the points.
I want to say on what not to do.
Let me just pop up over your house. Like, I love all the points you touched on, especially, you know, I'm going to try to relate to you, but I can't really relate, you know, like, I think it's just better off just saying, hey, I love you, brother, or I love you, sister. Yeah. If you guys need anything, we're here for you. You know?
And on that note, do you ever follow through if someone says, do you need anything?
Oh, most definitely.
I think some people sometimes say it, though.
Don't mean it.
Right?
Yeah, almost definitely.
Because are you serious when you say, let me know if you need anything? Because I can't think of one person that I've called that says, let me know if you need anything. But I have found that if you feel those thoughts in your mind, which I have learned through my experiences, as I've shared, is revelation, right? God speaks to me personally through, it's my own thoughts, right? That just kind of are different than my regular thoughts.
Yeah.
But I just act on it. So I know now if somebody is going through a surgery or an open challenge in their life, I say, hey, what's your favorite Papa Murphy's pizza?
There you go.
Instead of waiting,
I don't ask. Let me know if you need anything. Do you think they're going to text me? Hey, I want Papa Murphy's on Friday.
Yeah.
No, they're not going to text you that.
No.
So you just have to take the initiative. And so I don't ask. I don't say, let me know if you need anything. I say, Papa Murphy's is my go-to, because then that just means I don't have to make the food, but they can bake it at their own leisure.
Right.
Yeah.
And I've never had anybody turn me down. Like, no, thank you. You know, it's like, are you sitting? No, you don't need to do that. You know, it's like, no, it's so easy. I'm not even making it. Like, just let me know. I'll drop it off.
And you don't even have
to make it.
You
can bake it anytime you want.
Throw it in the fridge.
Right?
And, you know, you can bake it whenever.
It's so empowering. And actually on my what to do list, if I were to say, so we just talked about what not to say, but actually what to do is like meal delivery.
Yeah.
You know, if you can't bring like a homemade meal, a Papa Murphy's, or I know in Utah it's prevalent, and I think in some of the Western states, like Beehive Meals or something like that, where it's like frozen meals. I had a couple people pay for that and bring that to my house. And I just remembered as a mom just sitting there and crying with gratitude, because I didn't feel like I had to wait on somebody at 6 o'clock to be inconvenienced to bring my family food. You know, it was like, oh, great. I can open the freezer. I can put it in the oven. I feel like I'm making something for my family, but I'm not having to grocery shop and go to all the work. So that's super empowering. I have had to handfuls of people reach out and be like, what can I do? I have a friend that's going through cancer. Can you give me some tips? You know, and that's always my go-to is, hey, meal delivery.
Meal delivery.
Reach out and say, if they're comfortable with that, and we'll shoot you down. We'll say, no, you don't need to do that. It's okay. And it's like, no, it's going to be delivered. Like, what day is best for you? Like, I have nothing to do with it. It's just going to show up.
Right.
And it can even be anonymous, right? You don't have to put your name on it. You could just, hey, meal delivery to this house. And nowadays, DoorDash is really prevalent, you know? Like, I mean, be creative, but feeding people who are going through trauma, especially when they have little people, they need to eat. And I remember one night, though, like 1 week after surgery, we had like 4 nights of Papa Murphy's pizza in a row delivered. And my kids are like, this is the best.
That's awesome. They're in heaven right now.
Right.
Getting pizza all the time.
So, and then a cleaning service is helpful, too. You know, if you have the extra income.
I never thought about that.
Yeah. If you have the extra income and, you know, I would never want the Relief Society coming over to my house and cleaning. No. But if I was approached, I actually paid for a cleaning service when he was sick, because it just helped me and empowered me and didn't make me feel guilty that there's just another thing that I can't do.
Yeah.
I can't, you know.
Just another thing on the plate.
And I was judged for it by some family members. Why don't you just clean your own house? You know, it was just like, because I don't want to spend my energy and time doing that right now. But if somebody is going through something hard, and if they're a close family member, you know, you could be like, hey, money isn't an issue. And once a month or twice a month, we would love to, if you want to arrange this cleaner that's vetted, that's vouched for, insured, licensed, whatever, that we'd love to have that help you if you feel that would be beneficial and helpful. So I think, you know, meal delivery and possible cleaning, and then inviting people, treating us normal. Don't handle us with white gloves. Like, don't give us the look, right? But don't judge us and assume, oh, they're not going to want to come.
Yeah.
They're too sad. Yeah. Or they're going through hard stuff.
Mm-hmm. That might be.
They're not going to want to participate. It's like, I would way much rather be invited and say, oh, man, that's not going to work for us than find out that we weren't invited because you judged that
we could
our decision was based upon our situation.
Most definitely.
And especially going forward after his loss, you know, and I was a single mom, so I didn't fit the typical look and feel. So it's like, maybe she doesn't have a spouse, so maybe we shouldn't include her because then she'll feel weird or, you know, it's just like, let me make that choice.
Yeah.
You know, if I feel uncomfortable, then I won't go. But don't make me feel ostracized or shunned because I'm not like you, like everybody else.
For those that are trying to take those type of things in consideration because they don't want to give you the cliche answers or the you know, the same thing that everybody says that just seems empty, I feel like people have this like gray line they try to walk where they want to continue to treat people going through this type of situation normal, but at the same time, they want to respect and honor the fact that they're going through the situation at the same time. So it's like they don't want to act like it didn't just happen.
Yeah.
But at the same time, they don't want to be different because you're going through it. Like they want to try to give you the respect of saying, you know, like, we still love you. We still want you to come around. We still want you to be around you. We still want you to come if you can and things like that. But how do I say these things without seeming insensitive to the situation?
Say it exactly just like you said it.
Just like that?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I mean, don't you think? Like that takes so much courage.
I agree.
Like, just be vulnerable and real. Like, honestly, if this makes you uncomfortable or you feel bad that I invited you, that's not my intention. Like, I don't know what to do, but I love you and I want you to be a part of my life. And I mean, just keeping it real and sharing that your actual inner thoughts, like maybe this is awkward or weird and I'm coming across hurtful. I don't mean to, but this, you know, it's so big to be included.
Yeah. Because the trap is like when we go through those hard things, like when you were talking about how your husband wanted to just, you know, wallow and not do anything, like the trap is to like isolate yourself, and that's what the adversary wants us to do as well.
You're alone.
Yeah,
you're on this yourself. Right.
No help is coming,
and so it's important to have that support, you know, to have people that could, you know, reach out to you or that you can reach out to and say, hey, I need to talk. Let's you know, let's get together. And I think it's really important during those times, because for me, and you may have felt like this too, but yeah, when we lost our daughter, that whole year, like it's been 4 years, but you just felt really dark. Mm-hmm. You felt alone. You felt like, why is this happening? And you just felt like helpless. And so to have that support, it's life changing, you know, and it makes it a little bit better. It doesn't take the pain away or anything, but it can help you.
Yeah. The connection can help you heal. Having people around you that support you and love you. Cause like you said it perfectly, the adversary wants you to feel alone. Mm-hmm. Feel despondent, feel depressed, feel miserable. And it's not like you're not going to be sad because your loved one died. Yeah. But you do get peace and comfort when you're around people that are safe, that love you. Yeah. So absolutely. So. Absolutely.
So I have, I guess, to kind of pivot with that. Pivot may not be the right word, but to kind of piggyback off that. In this particular case, we're talking about how you guys have dealt with loss and what that's like and what to do, what not to do. So now you mentioned, you know, there's been issues in dealing with that loss. There's been residual effects and things and how that's affected you guys. And now you've had journeys through and or are going through mental health issues.
Yeah.
And how to just, whether that's through coping or maybe they're not necessarily related, but now we're in the thralls of how to process other things that we have going on as well. It's been 9 years for your family, and that doesn't necessarily mean that it's not still prevalent, but what was the journey like for you guys mentally dealing and processing with your new life? Mm-hmm. And not necessarily immediately after, because that's kind of like still the grief, but now it's been like a year, maybe two, and now you're starting to see other things maybe
That pop up
and having to deal with that.
Good question. Grief is a roller coaster.
Absolutely.
All right. I had someone, I'm standing next to the casket at the viewing, and I had a family member on my late spouse's side who came up and said, how long are you going to be sad for?
Oh, God. What?
And I...
Wow.
I just... What?
The gall.
I just looked at him with my mouth open and...
For...
And I have an answer for that now. A perfect one. Dang, you know those times where you're like, if only I could get a time machine and go back, I'm going to do this. And this is what I would say is, how long is he going to be gone for?
Mm.
You know? When people are like, how long are you going to grieve? Well, how long are they going to be dead?
Mm-hmm.
That's the answer, because grief looks different, but you will forever love them,
right.
Want them, miss them.
Mm-hmm.
Countless times in a day, I think about him going forward. You know, I loved, people think it's like grief is like waves of the ocean, right? Where you're like, oh boy, you know, I can't to this day. I do not like chick flicks at all. I don't watch them. Mm. I don't, I did, however, watch the Bradley Cooper, Lady Gaga, Stars Born, and I like cried for 45 minutes straight afterwards. Like, you know, anything that resonates really close to my life story, mm-hmm. like I just can't go there.
Can't do it.
But my children, I mean, my son is a senior in high school. Mm-hmm. My next son is 8th grade.
Mm-hmm.
My daughter's older and moved out, but my two now, and boys are all about their moms, I think, when they're like 6, 5, 4, 3, 7, 8. It's like their mom is like, everything. I remember my one son was like, Dad, when you grow small, I'm going to get big and marry mom, you know? And he was like, oh, really? You know, my boys were so enamored by me when they were little. And I have found with grief as they, you know, my son who is 18 now, but a senior when he turned starting football, going into 10th grade was the worst year of grief that I saw for him. And that was, his dad had been gone for 7 years.
Oh, yeah.
Mm. And it was like suicide ideation, deep depression. It's like for a boy turning into a man.
Yeah.
It's like, where's my dad? Yeah. You know, like,
who's supposed
he was all state.
This?
He had a baseball scholarship. He was all state football. Like, he was the quintessential man that boys want to idolize and to be like, he's not here. Like, who do I look to? And no matter what, your dad is your dad. And so I have remarried, and Todd, my now spouse, is incredible. He's amazing. He's great. He's not their dad.
Yeah.
Nobody will. My dad is going to be 80 next month. Like, I can't relate to my children. My mom is still alive. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it's like to have, you know, a parent remarry and bring, you know, another like
around.
Parental figure around. But mm-hmm. I know my boys, they like Todd. They love Todd. They're grateful for him. But he's a friend.
Right.
He's not their dad.
It's not the same space.
And so
yeah.
That grief, to see that ebb and flow, and as a parent to be like, I know exactly what's going to help him. His dad being here to sit down and have a conversation with him. And my little boy who's in baseball, and he's in 8th grade, and it's just like, I see the pain, like the searing deep pain of just him see his cousins go out on a trip with their dad or go fishing with their dads or go throw a ball with their dads.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you guys follow the Dodgers and the Yankees.
Yeah.
The World Series game last night.
Yeah.
Okay. Did you see that grand slam in the end already?
Walk off, Freddie Freeman.
My now husband is from Orange County. So he's a Dodger fan all the way
through.
And nobody likes the Yankees, let's be honest, right? If you like the Yankees, something's wrong. But we're watching it last night, and Freddie, right, hits the grand slam.
Yep. Freddie Freeman.
And what does he do? He runs straight to his dad.
Yeah,
after he, you know, runs around the bases
and everything.
He runs straight to his dad.
Yeah.
And his dad actually was a cancer widow. The wife, his mom passed away from a melanoma when he was little. And so his dad was there for him his whole life. And then we read an article. After that, we read an article, you know, it's like, okay, let's research Freddie.
Yeah.
And we read an article how his dad, you know, did all these things with him, connecting with that sport throughout his whole life, and how important his dad was, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then it, you know, it even last night, you know, brought me to tears. Like, I feel so sad for my kids. My boys, especially, they don't have that, you know? And I said to my spouse, it's like, some days I wonder, like, would my kids be better off had I passed and Clint still be alive, you know? And I know that's not true. And he held my hand and was just like, don't say things like that. You know, it's not, you know, you're so great for them, but it's like, it's hard. It's heavy. And forever, you're going to grieve for that person, right? Absolutely. Graduation, weddings, Father's Day every year, Mother's Day. I mean, whatever, their birthdays, their death days, you know, it's forever. And that's why it's like that. Until how long are they dead for? That's how long you're going to grieve.
Yeah.
And that's okay. And I think we're in a culture where it's like people want to just make you better. Like, oh, go, just get it. Here's a tissue. You know, which, speaking of that, I need
to. Right.
but it's okay to just sit there and be with people when they're going through that grief and loss. You don't always have to. You can't make it better, but you can be there to support them and love them. But grief is messy, and mental health. And I'm so grateful. I know you had said you had someone on a previous podcast speaking about mental health. Mm-hmm. It is real. It is. And I've had to tell some, since we have a blended family. My now spouse has 5 children, but they're all 18 and older. But I've had to have a discussion with one of his kids who's going through mental health. It's like, hey, if you had cancer, you wouldn't feel ashamed or bad that you had a cancer diagnosis. Like, that's how real mental health is.
Yes.
Depression is just as real as a cancer diagnosis. Like, there's no shame in that game.
Right.
Like, and it's so powerful if you can acknowledge that and work through it. Yeah, have faith. God will help you have joy and happiness. Well, what if that's not working?
Right.
Yeah.
Because I feel like that's such a powerful tool of the adversary, is to numb us out and numb our feelings. Because when we're not in touch with those feelings and we're depressed, the spirit can't get through.
At all.
No. And if we don't treat that, like if it's something that impedes us, that stops us in our daily lives, are we not finding joy in those things that we used to? Do we not want to connect? Are we not finding joy in certain things? You know, there's tests you can go to online, health, mental health professionals to see. But sometimes you do need medication. Sometimes you do need medical intervention to help you with mental illness. And I know for my children, weekly therapy has been huge. My boys now, they still to this day do therapy every other week.
That was going to be my next question, is like, what have you guys found to be the best coping or way to kind of still be able to find, you know, your happiness and joy throughout your days for your children. Mm-hmm. And so therapy has been one of your...
And talking about it, you know, not my boys will share their feelings, and I'm grateful for that. And they have learned that through going to therapy, that it's okay. And my boys want to protect me sometimes, and they don't want to share. But I know it gives me peace that's like, okay, they are sharing with someone.
With somebody.
Who is a professional that can guide them.
Yes.
And help them navigate and have those tools. You know, both of them have struggled with suicide ideation. You know, well, what tools do they need to pull out of their tool belt, right, to help them in that moment? Yeah. And if we can't give that to them, if we feel underqualified, or even if we have the qualifications, sometimes our kids don't want to learn from their mom or their dad.
Exactly. Yeah.
I don't know why, but if someone else says it, they will listen, you know? So I'm grateful for that extra help having a great therapist. It took a lot of different therapists to find one that worked for them. So if you're listening and you're going through this, or your kids are, and it's like, oh man, it doesn't work for me, it doesn't work for them. I've had several friends. It's like, you just need to find the right one that you connect with, that you resonate with. My boys, I have found work way better and have thrived with a male therapist. Mm-hmm. And they refused at first several times, a lot of pushback when we had a female therapist for them.
Absolutely.
But maybe that's different for you, but you never know. If you're not feeling like you're getting that support, that mental help, finding,
keep trying.
Keep trying. you know, not every color in the crayon box everybody loves, you know.
Right.
So maybe just not be right for you, and that's okay. Like, find somebody else, but you try to actively get that help, because when we get those hormones balanced in our brain, then it provides a better ground, right, for the spirit.
Absolutely. And
those emotions to be felt. And as a parent, I'm standing on the side like a coach watching a game, and it's like, oh, gosh, are you sure you want to make that pass?
Right.
Yeah.
Are you sure you want to go down that road? You know, yeah. It's a weird spot to be in with free agency and children that are older and yeah. watching them make choices. And it's just going back to the temple where it's just like, hey, I am trying in my power to do everything I can to have my hope, my life, my example affect them. And maybe in the next chapter or two, or maybe not till the afterlife, you know, but God has promised that he will go before us, right? Mm-hmm. He will be on our right hand and on our left, and angels yeah. round about us to bear us up mm-hmm. through our hard, if we choose him.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we have to want that, you know.
Absolutely.
And I, every day I find I have to recenter and plug back into my faith, where it's like, okay, I do not want to go down that road of, why is this my life? Why can't it just get better? You know, it reminds me of the Book of Mormon, right? When Laman and Lemuel and Nephi, and they're going on their journeys, and Laman and Lemuel get chastised, and they come back to the faith. And then all of a sudden something goes bad, and then they turn back and look at their whole life, everything that went bad. Well, yeah. we left our house. We left our yeah. riches. Our women are this. And, you know, I find it's very easy, and Satan wants us to go down that. But remember all these things yeah. that have yeah. happened bad to you in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay, I can't. So can't it's just that plugging in to God, where it's like, okay, help me have faith. And I love the armor of God symbolism, right? Where it's like, when you know that dragon is breathing fire on you, what's going to help you? The shield of faith.
Shield of faith, yeah.
And it's like, I just have to think of that in my mind. It's like, okay, what can I do today to help my shield of faith? Because if not, I'm going to just
yeah,
cry and look at all my afflictions and woe is me.
Yeah,
and I can't do that.
And I think that's such a relatable message, because here comes some more like anecdotes or things that people always say. You know, people always say, you know, we all going through something. You know, not that it's necessarily relevant right here, but that's just something people say, especially in, you know, just in public settings and things like that. We're all going through something, you know, and usually that's followed by, you know, reasons why we should love one another, reasons why we should look out for each other, reasons why we should reach out to the people that we know. And in this conversation, we've talked about loss and how to deal with loss and cancer in particular, and what that does to a family because of the slow way that it takes someone away from us. So there's a process of coming to grips with it while you're watching the person going through it slowly be pulled from you.
Yeah, that is so hard.
And then they're gone, and now navigating life without them. And it's a really heavy topic. So I know that to the viewers that are watching, it's a lot easier to kind of tap into that sad space as far as what people are going through, because we've given you some context as to what you are going through, loss. Mm-hmm. But we're all going through something.
Mm-hmm.
And what you just said is so relevant to what I wanted to speak to. And just each day you have to make a choice
mm-hmm.
to move forward. Each day there is a choice to say, I'm not going to let it get me. I'm going to take some steps to move past it. I'm going to handle it. Whether that's involving God, because you need the spirit and you need him and connectivity to him, a connection to him, or whatever it might be, there's always a choice when you wake up in the morning, whatever you're dealing with, to decide, I'm going to do what I can to work my way through or past it and not let it keep me back. And I just love that message that you just gave, because that's what I got from what you just said there. Mm-hmm. I'm not going through grief in that way like you two are, but we do got issues that we have to get through. I have my own personal yeah. issues that I have to get through, and some days are harder than others pushing through that. But it's so relevant that you do the work. I'm going to choose to do that work. I'm going to use my agency. I'm going to use what tools that I may have to get me through it. And if I'm lacking the tools, I need to do a better job of finding them, seeking them out, whether that's mental health in this particular case or anything else, help from others, receiving the service, speaking to somebody if I can't speak to who I need to speak to, because maybe that relationship isn't there. I don't want to talk to mom. Mom mm-hmm. always talks to me, but I can talk to her. I don't want to talk to dad. He always does this, but I can talk to him. But finding those outlets and things, that's the work. Every day, if we choose to do the work to move forward,
yeah,
it puts us in the best possible scenario to do it.
Yeah. And
I love that.
Giving to others.
Yes.
Is huge.
Yeah.
Yes.
And can I speak on that sure. before we wrap up? Because I know that you mentioned like giving to others. And I wanted to ask you about I followed your page and see some of the outreach that you do, and you have done some for refugee, mm-hmm. correct? So can you speak on that a little bit? Like everything that you've gone through, you still have found time to think outside of yourself and give assistance to a people that really need it.
Yeah.
And so what drove you to do that, and how was that? How was the response?
I think the catalyst was being on the receiving end and really resonating with, wow, giving does make a difference. It changes people's lives. A text, a meal, a act of service. People are like, oh, you know, I know it doesn't mean anything, or I know it's so little, but it's like, what? You had no idea how much that saved me. So having gone through that, it completely changed my perspective on giving. And when you give, you receive way more than you ever could think possible. And so I have taken that with me since his passing. And I know that his life and the things we choose to do and share and talk about, and you guys similar, you know that it helps others. So then it buoys you up and it gives you courage. Like, oh, I can still keep giving because I know people are receiving and it helps them grow. And I wanted my kids to get more of a taste for that. And so back a couple years ago when the airport blew up in Afghanistan,
yep. mm-hmm.
I remember watching it on TV and being like, oh my gosh, what can I do? And then I remember, you know, about a couple weeks later, Utah being designated a refuge, one of the many refugee states.
States, yeah.
And then as I kind of dug into that, and again, it was just those thoughts in my mind that now I have learned his revelation, mm-hmm. Was maybe you should look into how you can help, you know. And I looked and there was a news article, and Catholic Community Services was the designated charity in our area. And so I plugged in with them. I did everything, all the necessary paperwork and fingerprinting and, you know, whatnot. Absolutely. And there's all these different ways you can volunteer. So I know the Church of Jesus Christ, we do justserve.org. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there is so many outlets that if you're like, I don't have time for that, ain't nobody got time for that. You know, so like a little jingle me and my family tout out a lot. But really, if you ain't nobody got time for that, well, there is something that you can customize that works for you and your family and your life.
Yeah.
And for me at that time was I just really felt drawn to helping the refugees, Afghani refugees, and they're all over the country. So many mm-hmm. states are refugee states sanctioned, yes. and there's mm-hmm. programs. And they say you can't help with a family continuously every week for an hour or two. Well, you could go help set up an apartment for a refugee family. Mm-hmm. You can be a mentor for adolescents that it's kind of like big brother, big sister, right? And after school program. There's so many different ways. I chose a family volunteer for our family. And so my kids were able to then come and meet the Afghani refugees. And we work with one family about every 6 months. And then they ask, okay, would you be willing to help with another family? And honestly, now it's the people we have met, I adore and love. And I, every day, like, I'm so grateful that I have been given so much from, in my perspective, for me giving, I have been given way more. And the humility and the simpleness. And it's like asking one of our friends who are refugees, it's like, hey, what do you think about America? You know, because to us, you know, especially with the election coming up, sometimes it's a dumpster fire, you know, it's a hot mess over here. But really, he just looked at me and he's like, oh, it's good. You know, I go to work, I come home, my family live, I no worry for their safety. My wife, my kids, they're good. Yeah. They go to school, they come home, they're safe, nobody kills us. And it's like
very basic need.
Whoa.
Makes their life so much better.
Yeah. Holy. What is wrong with us?
Excluding the lives being threatened.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, we are so blessed and so lucky. And so for my kids to have a front row seat, like, yo, hello.
Puts everything in perspective.
It'll take you back home, bro.
All right. It's so amazing. And then to have the Muslim faith be introduced to my family as well. Mm-hmm. It's just like, especially where we are at and how I was born and raised, very few Muslims around. And so especially with stereotypes and hijackers and, you know, all these things where it's like, ooh, ISIS, you know, where a religion is now labeled as a negative stereotype, it was such a refreshing opportunity to have the Muslim faith be so beautifully represented. And they unabashedly share in such beautiful ways. And we've had so many great conversations. It's like, and they're like, hey, any Muslim that doesn't love Jesus Christ is no Muslim. And it's like, oh, hey, I did not know that, you know, like, and it's really been fun to see their personalities, their perspectives, and their faith has strengthened my own. And one family we call that's my brother and that's my sister. And that's awesome. They're here alone. All their family's still in Afghanistan. They have no family here. But, you know, I'm like, you're my sister. And she just had surgery on her ankle, our one friend. And it's like, Zora? And she had to have surgery on the other ankle. And I was, when I knew that the second surgery was coming and we weren't told the first time, I was like, if you do not have your husband tell me when you're having surgery, I'm going to be mad at you. Right, you know, like, problem. You have to tell me. I would tell you. And she's like, yeah. Because we had a death of my kid's grandfather and they brought over, they're the first to be like, hey, we're bringing you by food on Friday, you know? And it's like gourmet, amazing Afghani food. And you're like, but they're the first ones to show up and be there for my family when they know we're going through hard things. And so to just let her know. And then we showed up, obviously, with Papa Murphy's pizza. You know, halal, no meat, no pork. You
need a sponsor.
Right? I know. I need to get a sponsorship for a podcast with them. But just being able to show up and be there for them and that symbiotic reciprocity of giving.
Yeah.
There is joy in it. Yeah. You know? It is. It makes a difference. Mm. Those small and simple things are great things. So having learned that through giving, it gives me more desire to give more.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you so much, Camille Bauer.
Camille Bauer.
There you go. Woo-woo. Thanks for having me, guys. Yes.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you for your faith. Uh-huh. And to our viewers, thank you all for tuning in to Brothers in the Foyer. Again, we want to encourage everyone to follow Camille. Go to her page. She's on Instagram, YouTube, any other platforms that you have.
Yep. So my YouTube channel is Camille Bauer, KamilleBauer. And my podcast is Put On Your Big Girl Pants.
There you go.
When life's hard, you just got to put on your big girl pants. My husband jokes nowadays. He's like, I had a bad day at work. I just need to put on my big girl pants. I'm like, yeah, do it.
There you go.
So, yeah.
You guys heard that. Do it. Go follow, subscribe. And again, we're Brothers in the Foyer. We're on all major platforms, YouTube, Instagram, Apple Podcasts, you name it. We love likes, subscribes, and follows. And please, please comment. We love interacting with you all. We love to hear your perspectives, your views. That's why we're here, to have this open platform for everyone to just come closer to Christ, be more united, and have this community where we can all speak freely and help one another out. Thank you again for tuning in to Brothers in the Foyer.
See you next time.
Awesome.
That was awesome.